Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Anidi Akure, who is the Executive Director of Africa Faith and Justice Network, a community of advocates for responsible U.S. relations with Africa. He's a member of the Order of Preachers in the Dominican province of St. Joseph the Worker in Nigeria, and has served in various pastoral capacities in Nigeria and the Democratic Republic of Congo and the United States. Welcome to Background Briefing, Anidi Akure.
Thank you very much.
And what is the explanation for how Boko Haram was able to seize this town of Baga on the border with Chad, and a big military base that was manned by a multinational task force of troops from Nigeria, Chad, and Niger apparently fled when the attack took place, and essentially abandoned the civilian citizens of this town to this incredibly murderous group, Boko Haram?
Well, I think it's good that we examine the background, you know, to at least to today. The first is that the area already has been under siege by Boko Haram, number one. Number two is the issue of morale within the Nigerian military. And number three, there are issues of politics, namely the three states where Boko Haram is currently operating. The leadership of those three states are under the auspices of APC, the major opposition to the current ruling party. And so you have politics, you have the morale within the military, and then you have the issue of trust. I will address those issues one by one. You have the issue of trust, namely some people not really trusting the military, and the military not really trusting the commanders, namely Abuja government and the top commanders, in the sense that they don't feel the support and they don't feel that they're equipped enough to address the issues generated by Boko Haram. So when you add all that up, it seems to give Boko Haram an upper hand, in the sense that they seem to be better organized. They have a higher morale, which means once they get one village and nobody is pushing them back with aggression, they take another and take another. It's like it's boosting their morale. And conversely, the military, on the other hand, losing morale, you know, weakening morale over and over. And I think what led to this is that, as you, I don't know if you recall, a few days ago, an adjacent village was raided and 40 young men were captured by the military, by Boko Haram. And so to have them now launch an attack on a military base that is supposedly multi-task force, composing of troops from Nigeria, Chad, and Niger, and then taking over, that's really, really a big blow on the military. Even though the military has tried to deny each time Boko Haram seizes its weapons, namely the military weapons, they try to play down the magnitude of it. And so something is amiss here, and many Nigerians are wondering what is really going on.
Well, this is a multinational base on the border that has been set up to monitor criminal activity on Lake Chad. But it was almost entirely manned by Nigerian troops who fled. And the part of that I don't understand, Anidi Akure, is that 10,000 Nigerians have been killed by Boko Haram this year alone, or this last year, 2014 alone. So what does it take to get the attention of the government of Goodluck Jonathan?
That's an excellent question, because there seem to be a nonchalant attitude on the part of the federal government towards Boko Haram. Let's go back to the abducted girls at Chibok. You know, these girls were abducted. 3 weeks later, the government did nothing. You know, we didn't see anything happening until people outside the country and a group of women within the country started making noise, you know, protesting. We organized a protest here in Washington. People gathered in London and across Nigeria. And our first lady, Michelle Obama, were posting a hashtag. It was then that the government in Nigeria responded to what it should have done 3 weeks earlier. So that kind of attitude makes people wonder what is really going on. Is the federal government really concerned about what is going on, or is it playing politics? And to some people, when they see that, touching what I mentioned earlier, that those three states are strongly APC, the opposition party, others feel that the non-responsive, apparently non-responsive or aggressive response on the part of the federal government is linked to that, that the advisors around the government, around the president, are either not giving him the full picture or giving him wrong political advice. Either way, it is not settling well with Nigerians.
Well, it's very hard to understand. Again, I'm speaking with Anita Okure, the Executive Director of the Africa Faith and Justice Network, who is a member of the Order of the Preachers of the Dominican Province of St. Joseph the Worker in Nigeria and has served in various pastoral capacities in Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the United States. What I find hard to understand, Anita Okure, is that Nigeria has been run by military governments for some time up until this recent interregnum with more democratic but just as corrupt governments, it appears. Obviously, the leaders were lining their own pockets largely, but still, you know, with a military government, the military tends to get, you know, the cream off the top. So why is it that there's such a lack of morale and motivation with the Nigerian military?
Yeah, there is talk within the military and some of the people around the military that with the advent of the civilian regime, that the civilian government was, quote, gradually weakening the military to ensure that, quote, it doesn't stage another coup. I don't know how true that is, but that has been the news that is floating around. And secondly, is that what is happening here, that the government, the federal government has not been aggressive enough in equipping the military to deal with Boko Haram. Here's the situation. What you have just indicated, in the past decades, the Nigerian military has had an excellent reputation across the continent. They have put down, you know, uprising in other countries that have led AU, OAU/AU, peacekeeping force. They are the biggest shareholder and key players in ECOWAS, that is the Economic Community of West African Countries. And so that reputation is there. And that's the question many Nigerians continue to ask. What happened to this formidable military? What happened to these people who have succeeded in putting down uprising in other countries, even when those militants were far, far more superior and larger in number than Boko Haram? What's going on? And that's really the puzzle here. How do we explain that the Nigerian military is incapable of containing what started up as a ragtag group of people who have now grown into a formidable force against the military? Let me go back to the issue of morale within the military. As you are aware, this is not the first time the military have abandoned their base and run, or even refused to take action. Currently, there have been 54 soldiers quote, sentenced to death for refusing to engage in Boko Haram, and now they are being charged with mutiny. And of course, some people are now have taken the case to the UN. But the point is that the military here is that those soldiers go and they fight with inferior weapons, they get killed. 3 months after their death, the military stops paying anything to the family, while the politicians live fat in excessive salaries. So there are a number of things that discourage the military in engaging and giving their life for people who don't seem to appreciate them. And then on the other hand, coming back to the issue of trust, you know, this same area is the area that in 2013, after the military were ambushed and killed, the offensive from the military was so brutal that they said, you know, the military had killed a couple of hundred people in the process of trying to react to the attacks on their men. And then there is the trust them on the side of the people, not trusting the military not trusting the people, the military not trusting the federal government. And so the morale goes down and down and down.
Well, but is there a problem with international attention to Nigeria? You mentioned that the government of Goodluck Jonathan basically did nothing about the kidnapping of all the 200 schoolgirls until the rest of the world expressed outrage, including First Lady Michelle Obama. As far as I can tell, there's virtually no difference between Boko Haram and the Islamic State, the so-called Islamic State, in Iraq and Syria. They're just as they're identical. They're murderous. Rapists and thugs and killers hiding behind some kind of religious ideology that they clearly have no claim to. So why do we spend so much time being alarmed about the so-called Islamic State and not Boko Haram?
Well, that's another area that is very sensitive, at least from my standpoint, as one who is advocating for justice and human rights and human dignity. There is a little, there's something that worries me here. Namely, it's true that the Nigerian military has engaged in human rights violation. You know, they state that up front. We can't deny that. But I don't see the same, you know, when those of us who are engaged in upholding human rights, I don't see us having the same outrage condemning the human rights violations by Boko Haram. In other words, we seem to come down very hard on the Nigerian military and absolutely say almost nothing about the Boko Haram, who have engaged in far worse human rights violations over the years. And secondly, the international community, you know, it's on us. I'm hearing now that when the Nigerian military asks for assistance, Britain, for example, have said, oh, we are weary about giving latest weapons to Nigeria military because they are engaged in human rights violations. The U.S. says the same thing. And yet, as you say, you know, we are forming alliances with people we know in the Middle East are engaged in far serious human rights violations. We are forming alliances with them to fight the ISIS.
Sure.
So, There is something here that I can't really explain. I seem to be a double standard.
Absolutely. And I thank you so much for joining us. I'm afraid we've run out of time, Anidi Okoro, but thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Anidi Akure, who is the Executive Director of the Africa Faith and Justice Network. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can scroll down on the right-hand side to subscribe to iTunes podcasts. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.